first in an address to the nation yesterday, President Biden defended his administration's handling of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. The last U.S. troops left the country Monday, but the administration says that an estimated 1 to 200 Americans who wish to come home are still in Afghanistan. It's the week in Washington. We'll talk about the withdrawal from Afghanistan, the debate over resettling Afghan refugees across the U.S., and how the impact of a number of challenges has affected the Biden's polling, President Biden's polling numbers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the end of the two-decade-long war in Afghanistan? What do you think about the administration's decision to withdraw from the country? And about the growing debate over Afghan refugees with special visas coming to the United States? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Adam Wollner is a deputy editor from McClatchy, D.C. Adam, welcome back.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, let's give a listen to some of yesterday's address from President Biden. Here it is.
We're left with a simple decision. Either follow through on the commitment made by the last administration and leave Afghanistan, or say we weren't leaving and commit another tens of thousands more troops going back to war. That was the choice, the real choice, between leaving or escalating.
Adam, can you talk more about the case the president was making yesterday?
Yeah, really, I think, you know, President Biden yesterday was sought to sort of, you know, defend this whole process, because obviously these past few weeks have been very trying for the administration, both from the perspective of, you know, having to deal with the loss of several U.S. service members, and also just, you know, from a larger political standpoint. Really, this is the most criticism that they've faced, you know, so far since President Biden took office from both sides of the aisle. So with, you know, Once the U.S. had gotten past that August 31st withdrawal date, you know, officially ending a nearly 20-year war in Afghanistan, you know, I think he felt like he needed to outline to the American people exactly why he took the steps that he did, and why they maybe weren't always easy or didn't always, you know, maybe to some people seem like the right ones, but why he feels that they were, and why, you know, over time that, you know, history will judge him in a positive light. So I think, you know, this is certainly still something he's going to have to continue to defend for some time. Some of the polling that has come out over the past few weeks show that, you know, a majority of Americans, while they do support his overall decision to end the war in Afghanistan, that's something that the public has supported for some time now, that they, you know, a pretty solid majority doesn't approve of the way in which it was handled. You know, a lot of the chaotic scenes that have been playing out, you know, on everyone's TV screens for the past few weeks. So I think, you know, this was, you know, one of his, you know, perhaps his most forceful effort yet to defend his decision. And, it, you know, it's likely one that he will have to continue to defend in the coming weeks.
In that excerpt we heard from the speech, as you mentioned, there are two points here, the decision to withdraw and then the handling of that withdrawal. It seems like President Biden is trying to focus the conversation on the big picture decision to pull out U.S. troops, where the big criticism of the administration has been more over how that was done, right?
Absolutely. And because he knows that the public is with him on that first part of the argument, and has been for some time, right? That, you know, especially over time, as, you know, as that, with any news event, you know, it will fade and other things will take in its place. And especially when, you know, you talk about voters going to the polls again, whether that's next year or in 2024, you know, when they're thinking about what the president has done, what his administration has done, you know, I think he's betting on that ultimately they will reward him for following through on that campaign promise to end the war. That's ultimately what he did. You know, maybe it didn't unfold exactly how people wanted, but I think he's betting that over time that will sort of fade and people will, you know, basically, you know, just appreciate that the war is now over, and that, you know, there won't be any more risk for loss of life of American service members there going forward.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jerry is with us in Waukesha. Jerry, hi.
Hi there.
What do you think?
I guess my first question is, that conditional agreement that President Trump drafted with the Taliban, is that a classified document or is that available to the general public? Because I'd be curious to know how that read out and what the process was going to be. Because whatever process we saw and we heard about wasn't even a process. It was like a clown show with 20 clowns getting out of a VW. That's about how well it was orchestrated and carried out.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Do we know, had the Trump administration and Secretary of State Pompeo, they had negotiated the fact of withdrawal directly with the Taliban, leaving out the Afghan government. Do we know that they reached planning stages of the logistics of the withdrawal?
Certainly not to the specifics that we've seen here in the past few weeks, because that agreement was initially that the withdrawal date would start May 1st of this year. And obviously that would have been just a few months after President Biden took office. So they moved that deadline back a little bit later in the year. And again, you know, I think, you know, as the caller expressed, I think a lot of Americans do, you know, agree with the sentiment that, you know, the evacuation itself could have gone much smoother. Even if they do agree again with the overall decision to end the war, and, you know, and maybe if that deadline would have been extended a little bit longer, maybe things would have gone smoother. You know, it's really impossible to know at this point, but with President Biden, has outlined in recent days that he followed the advice of the military commanders and then the generals, you know, in the U.S. military. And they ultimately said that they should still stick by that August 31st deadline. So that's ultimately what they decided to do.
Jerry, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. It's the Week in Washington. We're talking about some of the top stories in national politics, including the withdrawal from Afghanistan and next Afghan refugees coming to the United States. In the United States now, you can join in with your thoughts on that and how you want to see this resettlement process go at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Adam, you've written some about the politics of the acceptance of Afghan refugees, especially those with these special visas that they applied for after having worked with Americans in Afghanistan. What are you seeing in terms of the politics surrounding that?
Right. Yeah, that's going to be, you know, another, you know, huge issue now moving forward after this evacuation of around 120,000 people from Afghanistan, which included both Americans, but also Afghan allies who have been working with U.S. troops and officials throughout the course of the war. Getting them resettled is going to be, both, you know, just a logistical issue, but also a political issue as well. It is something that a vast majority of Americans do, agree that the U.S. should play a role in helping these Afghan refugees get settled in the United States. Some polling has suggested upwards of 80% of Americans feel that that's something the U.S. should do, and even 76% of Republicans. However, you do have, a vocal minority within the Republican Party that includes some big names, including former President Donald Trump, who have raised concerns about some of these Afghan allies who are coming to the U.S., raising concern that they are not being properly vetted and that could, potentially lead to issues down the road in the U.S. That's something that the administration and their allies have forcefully pushed against, noting that these people are, first vetted in Afghanistan before they even began working with them, and then were vetted again before coming to the United States. So, even though it is something that is very popular with most Americans, and especially in this polarized environment, you don't really see many issues where you have, four out of five Americans agreeing on something. You are still going to have that sort of vocal minority from the Republican Party raising these concerns, and that, will put pressure on a lot of these Republican governors, Republicans who, lead towns and cities across the country as they decide whether or not to accept some of these refugees.
Republicans challenging the vetting process for some of these Afghan refugees include Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, who's raised concerns after a visit to Fort McCoy, where some of those refugees are arriving. But you said they're a vocal minority in the Republican Party. What are we hearing from other Republicans in support of taking in Afghan refugees?
That's right. Based on our reporting from earlier this week, we have heard from at least nine Republican governors across the country who said that they would welcome these refugees into their states. So I think it is notable that a lot of the, kind of the concerns that are being raised right now are being raised among people that won't necessarily have, any kind of direct impact over that process. You're talking about, again, former President Trump. You're talking about some members of Congress. It's ultimately going to be more at the state and local level where some of these decisions are made. But again, if they are feeling some of that political pressure from their base, that could make decisions along these lines a little bit trickier for them from a political standpoint.
Let's go back to our callers now. Mark is with us in Wautoma. Mark, hello.
Hi. I'm just wondering, how many refugees do you think we're going to be prepared to take in as a country? I mean, we didn't take in very many Syrian refugees after a military operation there. And I just heard your guest say that the decisions will be made at a local level. I'm wondering how that's even possible when they have to go through federal immigration processes to get to the United States.
Mark, thanks for that call. The overall number, I think, will be decided at the federal level. And is that still an open question, Adam?
Yeah, it is. We don't know the exact number yet. You know, the administration has said that they evacuated 120,000 people from Afghanistan, but that includes both Americans and Afghan allies. And as far as I know, they haven't exactly decided the split for that yet. And I should say, you know, it certainly is a partnership between the federal and the state and local governments. You know, it kind of, you know, starts at the federal level, but in order for everything to ultimately be carried out, a lot of that will happen at the state and local level.
We're picking up our look at the top stories in national politics. Adam Ulner is with us with McClatchy, D.C. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the U.S. taking in Afghan refugees. And coming up, we'll look ahead at 2022 politics and elections. 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go back to our callers now with Tom in Lake Geneva. Tom, mm-hmm. Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much. I am a honorably discharged Air Force captain, and I've been a very proud American for many, many, many years. I hate to admit it, but I'm really embarrassed to be an American at this point with what's been happening with our formerly great nation. I was just totally blown away watching President Biden kept looking at his watch, being totally bored, waiting for the caskets to pass so he could get back to whatever else he was doing. I just can't believe what's happening to this formerly great nation of ours, and I can't fully believe it.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. There is that level of frustration out there, Adam, with some people watching what's going on with the withdrawal from Afghanistan.
That's right. And, this is something that's obviously been building now for nearly 20 years across several administrations. And, you know, it's something now that several presidents have expressed that they wanted to do. And we can see why, some recent presidents, whether, you know, both President Obama and President Trump, you know, ultimately never were able to go all the way through with the withdrawal from Afghanistan, because it is, you know, a politically difficult decision. And, you know, it's never going to be, easy to wrap this sort of thing up. You know, of course, you know, you can certainly argue and debate, whether or not the administration made some wrong decisions, and that could have led to a smoother process, but it was certainly never going to be easy. So you can see why, you know, this is a decision that kind of kept on getting pushed further and further down the road. And now here we are, almost 20 years later, and it's finally come to an end, but again, not in a way that I think a lot of people wanted to see.
Thanks for that call, Tom. We'll go now to Owen in Wyawega. Owen, hi.
Hi, Rob. Of course, you know, you're going to get political fallback from this issue, no matter what choice you made. But my question is, I have heard conflicting things about refugees and how resettlement works. So when they come into the country, are they immediately able to be granted citizenship, meaning they become United States citizens and they can participate in democracy after they've been naturalized? And how long does that take? And how long are they exempt from paying income taxes before, after they gain residency?
Owen, thanks a lot for the call. Owen saying it was a difficult decision in either case. But question about refugees, by understanding, a quick lookup, refugees do pay taxes if they make income. And it's, I believe, like any other person immigrating to the country, there's a citizenship process that they have to go through. Adam, I don't know if you've been following that. Do you have anything to add?
That's right. No, I'm certainly not an expert on this process, but I, you know, I can tell you, you know, again, obviously, that if they wanted to apply for citizenship, that process, you know, takes years. And really, the first step for these allies who are coming through it is to get what's called a special immigrant visa, essentially. So that's really the first step of this process. But citizenship, you know, which they wouldn't have to apply for, but if they wanted to, that's a years long process.
Thanks for the call, Owen, at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Adam Wallner with McClatchy, D.C., looking at some of the top stories in national news. I want to turn to some other stories out there related to Afghanistan and other things going on in the country. A decline in President Biden's polling numbers. What are we seeing there?
That's right. You know, kind of amid this Afghanistan withdrawal, we've seen Biden's polling numbers drop. So far, it's to the lowest point of his presidency. He had been pretty comfortably above, kind of just above 50% for most of the past 7 months. But both between this and what a lot of the pollsters that I've talked to think has actually been a bigger contributor to his declining poll numbers has actually been the coronavirus resurgence as a sort of the Delta variant has spread. And I think a lot of people were preparing for the end of the summer and into the fall that, the pandemic would begin to recede, but it really has, come back with a vengeance in a lot of ways. So I think people are frustrated by that. And, we've seen in the polling that his handling of the pandemic, which usually he earned very high marks from the public for that, has decreased. So, which is why we've seen him continue to push for people to get vaccinated. He pushed for private businesses to impose vaccine mandates to get those numbers up to where the administration wants, where they think that they can start to really kind of make headway against this Delta variant.
Democrats worried about those polling numbers as they look forward to 2022. You have your eyes on election season 2021, though. Some governor's races around the country and some lessons maybe on how Democrats are going to run without a fellow named Donald Trump on any ballots anywhere. What kind of things are you looking at?
That's right. Obviously, he was a huge motivator for Democrats in both 2018 and 2020, inspiring, record high turnout and, obviously allowed Democrats to take full control of Washington. But now, kind of starting here this fall, Democrats are going to sort of get their first test of how can they continue to energize people to come out to vote when Trump is no longer in office and no longer can sort of be the villain that inspires a lot of these people. We're going to see some examples of that already next month. And in fact, voting's already underway in a recall election, which of course, Wisconsinites are very familiar with, mm-hmm. out in California, where Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom is facing a recall vote. And then later this fall in November, there are a couple of other governor's races, but Virginia is one that, political operatives on both sides often look to as a potential barometer for where the political environment is 1 year after the last presidential election and 1 year but before the next midterm. So I think it'll give Democrats a bit of a test run and an idea of how they need to adjust their tactics going into 2022 when they're going to be defending their slim majorities in the House and the Senate.
Let's go back to our callers with Bill on the line in Watertown. Bill, hi. Are you there, Bill?
Oh, hello. Yes, I'm still here. I think that Democrats are going to be energized to vote with the narrow margins in the House and the Senate breaking even, minus one vote. For the vice president to reestablish a larger majority so they can get something done, since Republicans aren't really doing anything at all. And I'm a former Republican that could no longer vote Republican after a Trump episode, which was just horrific.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Bill, seeing Democrats energized to try to keep and maybe build a majority, and an issue we haven't touched on. We're going to talk about this on the show on Friday. Roe versus Wade and abortion, with this Texas law coming into effect, the Supreme Court not stepping in, maybe another element energizing voters on the Democratic side. What do you think, Adam?
That's right. I think, especially if abortion politics really starts to sort of take center stage here, then, I think strategists on both sides will begin to sort of rethink what, how things are going to be shaped going into 2022. But, kind of regardless of exactly what issue takes center stage, a midterm election in a president's first year in office is always difficult for that party that's in power. They've historically had big losses. We can look back to 2018. We can look back to 2010. So, I think Democrats are going to be fighting headwinds regardless. Republicans are going to be energized to try and take back the House and the Senate and serve as sort of a check on President Biden. But I think there are certainly a lot of issues, abortion being one of them, that will also serve to energize the left. And a lot of times these midterm elections just comes down to which side is more energized. And obviously we'll have a much better idea of that about in about a year or so from now.
Bill. Thanks a lot for that call. Adam, what story do you have your eye on in the week or two to come?
Well, once we get back from the Labor Day weekend here, the attention is going to turn pretty quickly back to President Biden's economic agenda. They're hoping to get the infrastructure bill and the sort of reconciliation budget bill that's kind of paired alongside that passed at some point this fall. This is another thing that Democrats think that they really need to get done here in the next month or two, so that they have something to run on and show the American people sort of what they were able to accomplish for them and that they were able to deliver on some of their campaign promises. So, this is going to be a big stretch for the Democrats here, trying to get President Biden's economic agenda through Congress.
And very briefly, Adam, you drew attention to a tweet you had posted in 2013. Can't wait until Giannis Antetokounmpo leads the Bucks to an NBA title in 2023. How do you feel about being off by a couple years?
I'm glad that I was off, 2 years early rather than 2 years late. I tweeted that just on a limb, certainly tongue in cheek on draft night in 2013. But I couldn't be happier that it actually it became reality here. So I'm still riding high even more than a month after the Bucks became NBA champions.
Adam, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you.
That's Adam Molnar, deputy editor for McClatchy, D.C. He was with us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics.